This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Crime Alert, hourly update, breaking crime news now.
I'm Sydney Silvani. We begin tonight in Arizona, where a baffling abduction case has taken a chilling and deeply tragic turn. It has now been 20 weeks since Nancy Guthrie was abducted from her home in the Catalina foothills north of Tucson. For months, her family has held on to hope, but a horrifying new development has completely shattered that peace. A federal law enforcement source close to the case is saying that a second ransom note sent to the family indicates Nancy Guthrie has passed away, declaring she is buried with nature. This devastating news prompted an emotional public plea from her daughter, television anchor Savannah Guthrie, who spoke out on Tuesday to desperately beg the public for answers.
I wanted to just take the opportunity to ask people to beg people to come forward. Somebody knows something. And this is a new story today that is on your radar, but this is the life that my sister lives, that I live, that my brother lives, that our extended families live, that our children live every day. And we are in agony.
The agony in her voice is undeniable as the family marks this grim 20-week milestone. Savannah continued her plea, promising that they will never stop searching for her mother.
We cannot be at peace. So no matter how much I try to come out here every day and smile and find that joy, and I will, I promise I will. This is a moment to tell you that we need your help. We're begging for your help. And I'm not going to miss that opportunity. And so please, if you're watching,
yes,
no matter how small, the reward is there. You can tell us. It can be anonymous. Please do the right thing for us, for our family, for our children. And we love our mom, and we'll never stop looking for her. Never.
While the family begs for answers, investigators are parsing the strange details of these communications. Authorities haven't confirmed or denied the authenticity of the two original notes, nor have they identified who sent them. The source said that no money or Bitcoin was sent to the individuals, making it difficult for investigators to track them down. NBC reported on Monday that the second note sent to several media outlets claimed Nancy Guthrie had died, but didn't include a request for payment or an apology. However, Arizona's family reported that the second ransom note emailed to its sister station, KOLD, in Tucson, said she died and added her abductors never intended to hurt her. The note claimed she perished shortly after she was taken, is buried in nature now, and explicitly stated, "We are truly sorry." Pima County Sheriff Chris Nano said that the FBI has looked into numerous ransom demands since the beginning of the investigation, noting some are completely bogus, while others have the potential to be real. However, the presence of an apology inside a ransom communication is highly unusual. Retired FBI Supervisory Special Agent and former hostage negotiator Jason Pack said that people who have leverage do not apologize, they demand. Pack noted that a rambling, labored apology for an inadvertent death strongly suggests something went wrong that was not part of the perpetrator's original plan. More crime and justice news after this. We turn now to California, where an 18-year-old is jailed after allegedly plotting a massacre inspired by the Columbine High School shooting. Bradley Scott Sayer was booked into the Butte County Jail Tuesday, June 23rd, on suspicion of two counts of murder. The Chico Police Department announced the arrest following a fatal shooting at the Chico branch of the Butte County Library. Partnering with the Butte County Sheriff's Office and the FBI, police are actively reviewing facts. Investigators determined Sayer acted alone and had no prior connection to any victims. Police claimed his motivation was a desire to commit a Columbine-type massacre. Officers responded Monday, June 22nd at 5:12 p.m. after 911 calls reported gunshots and screaming. Two adults were killed and a juvenile was hospitalized with non-life-threatening injuries. Chico Police Chief Billy Aldridge stated the suspect fled but was quickly captured, calling the incident deeply traumatic. A massive multi-agency manhunt has ended in Independence, Missouri, where a body believed to be 22-year-old Oscar Sanchez Munoz was found by his family. Sanchez Munoz was the primary suspect in a deadly string of highway shootings near the Kansas City World Cup venues. The family found his remains in the basement of a burned home that caught fire during an overnight police standoff last week. They contacted police around 2 p.m. after clearing debris and noticing a distinct odor. Investigators, federal partners, and canine units had repeatedly searched the property without success because the basement partially collapsed, flooded, and was packed with clutter. The discovery ends a hunt that began after Sanchez Munoz allegedly fired at vehicles along Interstate 70 near Arrowhead Stadium during FIFA World Cup matches. The half-dozen shootings left one dead and several injured, including an Uber driver transporting soccer fans. The FBI had offered a $25,000 reward, warning he was armed and dangerous. Acting U.S. Attorney General Todd Blanche speculated the suspect was dead inside. Clothing on the body matches what the shooter wore, and a medical examiner will confirm the identity. Officials assure the public there is no further threat. In Pennsylvania, authorities released harrowing trial video of an armed man taking a 2-year-old girl hostage. A jury convicted Antonio Hammond of kidnapping and firearm possession following an hours-long standoff inside a Harrisburg home, as announced by the Dauphin County District Attorney's Office. Footage from May 30, 2023 shows the mother, Michelle Peters, recording Hammond as he held her crying autistic daughter. Outside, police ordered him to surrender. Hammond told the frantic mother that police were trying to kill him and to trust in God.
They're trying to kill me. My name is Antonio Hammond. They're trying to kill me.
I'm not letting the baby touch it, okay?
Keep it on us.
I got you. Just please give me my baby.
I'm not going to eat the baby because I love babies. I love people. I love kids.
Okay, but
the
listen.
They're trying to kill me.
Okay, but and I listen, don't even know you.
But you trust in God, so trust in God.
I do. I'm trusting this.
Okay, do you think God's going to hurt your baby?
I don't know you.
Come on. God ain't going to hurt your baby.
When Hammond ordered Peters to keep filming with her cell phone, she complied.
You got my baby, though.
But ain't nothing gonna happen to that baby.
Boy, I don't know that. I don't.
What do you think they're gonna do? They can't do that on camera. They can't do that on camera.
They
can't
do it on camera. I don't even know you.
They can't do it on camera. They can't kill nobody for no reason on camera. You can't kill nobody for no reason on camera.
Come on, give me my baby, please.
Not for no reason on camera.
Following that exchange, Hammond shouted to police outside that he did nothing, while Peters yelled back that he had walked into her apartment and taken her child hostage. The phone then dropped to the floor, leaving the audio muffled. After the recording cuts out, details of Hammond's past emerged. Hammond had absconded from parole months earlier. That day, two probation officers spotted him wearing a mask. Hammond fled, pointed a pistol at them from about 6 feet away, and pulled the trigger. It only clicked because there was no round in the chamber. Hammond then forced his way into Peters' apartment, demanding she record him so police wouldn't shoot. Peters eventually escaped with her infant, but Hammond held the toddler hostage for nearly 6 hours. A crisis response team breached the rear door. Hammond pointed his pistol at them and pressed the muzzle against the toddler's face. An officer forced the gun down and shot Hammond in the face, saving the child. Hammond survived to face trial. Where a woman with ties to an extremist cult-like group is charged with first-degree murder and conspiracy in the killings of her parents. Michelle Zajko was a person of interest in the murders of Richard and Rita Zajko, who were killed in their Chester Heights home on New Year's Eve in 2022. That date was also Michelle's birthday. Earlier that day, Rita Zajko sent her estranged daughter a text message saying she was sorry for the growing rift between them. The text went unanswered. Hours later, a car approached the home and two people got out. At the front door, one person yelled, "Mom." Michelle was their only child. The lights went on and the couple was executed. Their bodies were found following a welfare check on January 2, 2023. Investigators lack a smoking gun, but have multiple pieces of evidence showing Michelle's involvement. This includes two shell casings from the scene matching a gun used in Michelle's Vermont backyard. Investigators also recovered texts from Michelle writing she wished she had done things differently surrounding the homicide. The district attorney alleges this shows she was aligned with those who pulled the trigger. Officials say Michelle is tied to the Zeezians, an extremist group of young computer scientists with radical beliefs about artificial intelligence, veganism, and gender identity. The Zeezians are linked to 6 killings nationwide since 2022, including a Vermont Border Patrol agent in 2025, where Michelle allegedly provided the gun. The leader was Jack Lasota, known as Zeez. Last year, Michelle, Lasota, and an associate were arrested in Maryland on weapons charges. Lasota is also charged for refusing to cooperate regarding the double homicide. Michelle Zajko maintains her innocence and that of her group. In Utah, where a critical legal decision has shifted a high-profile capital murder case, a Utah judge on Monday cleared the way for prosecutors to rely on hearsay evidence at next month's preliminary hearing for Tyler James Robinson. Robinson faces the death penalty for his alleged role in the fatal shooting of Charlie Kirk on September 10, 2025, outside Utah Valley University. Judge Graff's ruling rejected defense efforts to compel a key witness's testimony. This clarifies what evidence will be permitted at next month's hearing to determine probable cause. Robinson faces severe charges, including aggravated murder, felony discharge of a firearm, obstruction of justice, witness tampering, and committing a violent offense in the presence of a child. Judge Graff denied defense challenges to Utah's hearsay rules. Graff emphasized that a preliminary hearing remains distinct from a trial because its primary mechanism is not to determine guilt or innocence. Instead, the hearing serves the limited purpose of assessing whether sufficient evidence exists to continue prosecution. Because of this restricted scope, the court concluded Utah law constitutionally allows prosecutors to establish probable cause through reliable hearsay accounts. Judge Graff also rejected the defense's motion to force Robinson's former roommate, Lance Twiggs, to travel from Texas to testify in person. Court records reveal prosecutors intend to rely on Twiggs' recorded interview with investigators. This recording will be presented alongside electronic messages, a handwritten note, and corroborating evidence, rather than requiring Twiggs to appear live. Robinson's defense attorneys argued they should be permitted to cross-examine Twiggs to challenge his credibility, expose alleged immunity agreements, dissect his state of mind, and attack statement reliability. However, Judge Graff concluded the defense failed to demonstrate that Twiggs' live testimony would be likely to defeat probable cause. Graff observed that while evidence of bias, motive, immunity, benefits, or inconsistent statements are highly relevant at trial, those issues do not automatically defeat probable cause now. The defense must show the evidence is so unreliable that it fails to support moving the case forward. Graff left the denial without prejudice, permitting the defense to renew their request if evidence changes. Furthermore, Judge Graff scheduled a hearing for Friday at 8:30 a.m. to address a defense request to remove the death penalty, alleging prosecutors violated a court gag order. Graff will also hear arguments opposing electronic media coverage, an issue pending before the Utah Supreme Court. Authorities announced a major breakthrough in a mass shooting investigation. The Toledo Police Department confirmed a second suspect is in custody following a chaotic outbreak of gunfire at a crowded neighborhood street festival. 20-year-old Ka'Nai Taylor was arrested Wednesday in Columbus. The apprehension required a coordinated effort by the U.S. Marshals Service, the Ohio State Highway Patrol, and the Franklin County Sheriff's Office. Taylor faces transport to Toledo to face prosecution on 11 counts of felonious assault. Court records do not currently list an attorney for him. This follows the June 11th arrest of 20-year-old L.J. Crisp Carr, who also faces 11 counts of felonious assault. The incident unfolded June 6th during the annual Old West End Festival in Toledo. A park filled with tents, music, and food trucks turned into a war zone. Toledo Deputy Police Chief Joseph Heffernan described the initial response.
At about 5:37 p.m., we got a report of some shots fired near our Old West End Festival, which is a festival we have every year. Officers were quick to respond. They were right there when the shots were coming out. Appears as though there was at least two shooters. I think They were probably shooting at each other.
According to investigators, a violent dispute between rival groups escalated. Two gunmen shot at each other, missing their targets, but wounding 12 bystanders, ranging from teenagers to a person in their 60s. A court complaint states video captures Taylor firing a gun directly into the crowd during the altercation. Police used video and regional intelligence data to identify Taylor, who was interviewed at the scene. An eyewitness also identified him. Court documents show video also captured Crisp Carr firing indiscriminately into the crowd. The violence forced organizers to cancel the historic festival's second day, leaving local leadership reeling.
It's just a shame, you know, when a few people, for whatever reasons, going through their head, decide to disrupt something that has been a beloved community event for many, many, many years.
For the latest crime and justice breaking news, be sure to tune in tomorrow on your favorite podcast app. With this crime alert, I'm Sydney Silvani.
This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.